You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're here, Bo Roots in the his house. We're taping this. It's May 4th. It's about 4:15 in the afternoon. You sent me a text with a link to an Athletic article from, is it from Mitch Sherman? I'm assuming
Mitch Sherman is the
mastermind behind this. It is from Mitch Sherman. And you... This struck you so much that you wanted to like drop everything and get your pod game right with your boy. So I'm excited. Excited to pick your brain with this thing. I think it's important to like frame kind of the story. So I'm going to read a little bit from the story. And again, we really urge everybody go. So we both are huge Mitch Sherman fans. The Athletic is. A great website. Make sure you go subscribe. Go check it out. I'm not going to read you the entire article, but I want to frame some of it so you have an idea of what we're kind of unpacking here. So I'm just going to read straight from the start of this thing, and then we'll kind of get into it. The Athletic charted the success of every Power 5 program at producing NFL draft picks classified according to their rankings as recruits or when they joined the college teams from which they were drafted. Three-star U is what the Athletic called the project, which programs are, you know, it looks at which programs are best at developing draft picks and which ones really, really struggle. Some points to make before I kind of get into the raw data of it. So the time frame that they're looking at for this exercise is basically from 2012 to 2022. Those 10 drafts.
Yeah.
Okay. That 10 or 11 years, Bo, is the worst. And this isn't like an opinion. You know, this is a fact.
Yes.
This is the worst decade of Nebraska football since Coach Jennings before Bob Devaney took the job. So you have to go back over 60 years.
I don't know that we have any listeners on this show that were born in that. You know, like maybe some of our oldest listeners.
Right.
But like most of our listeners were not born when this was a problem.
Yes. So, but I mean, anytime when you're going back 60 years for something, it's pretty historic. So this is the worst decade since pre-Devaney having to go back 60 years. Of the 11 years that they're looking at here, 7 of the 11 draft seasons, whatever you want to look at it, Nebraska had 7 losing seasons in those 11 years.
Yeah.
They only finished the season ranked in the final AP top 25 poll twice, and that was 2012-2013.
Yep.
Those are Bo Pelini back. That was kind of right as the, you know, the 9-win seasons were coming to an end and Bo was heading out. So it's just to give you a frame of reference of like, because sometimes, you know, it's not, I guess the reason I bring that up is it's not too tough of dots to connect for worst record on the field in college for Nebraska over the course of this 10 or 11 year sample size, also coinciding with major issues and a lack of NFL drafts, right?
Yeah.
Like people want to be like, man, just give me Billy Tryhard and Ricky out can do it, coach, and I'll go get it done.
Like, they just got to have want to, you know? So what I think maybe, I just sent you because I was like, God, it got me thinking.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, maybe sometimes a lot of what we do is like eye test, no eye test. It's kind of gut feeling. And I think like sometimes when you just get like numbers, like you get like hard numbers, like, and you're comparing them to other places, it puts it maybe more clear. I still like go back to the, you know, Dirk had that great article a couple years ago about like our turnover percentages that were like outliers with the rest of college football. Like it was bizarre, right? So I found that so helpful to understand, like, what is going on with us?
Right.
Because it was hard numbers. Like, and this is another thing where it's like, you're just looking at the numbers of, like, what we've recruited and what the results are. And it's kind of good to, it's good to see.
No doubt. I mean, you know, it's that whole cliche thing of, like, you know, men lie, numbers don't lie. And, yeah. And it's true. And numbers can, sometimes numbers can't tell the whole story, but sometimes they can kind of tell you the whole story. So
it's not a coincidence.
Yes.
That's right?
I wanted to frame it before we get into, like, just stop for a second. If you're, you know, Billy try hard and got to have want to, and just give me a bunch of dudes that, give me a bunch of walk-ons that play for the love of the Int. It's like, okay, like.
But you got to have that too. You got to have that too.
Right.
But that can't be the only story we tell ourselves.
Because
right?
You know what? You know what's a fallacy and one of the things that sometimes takes on a life of its own in maybe a detrimental way? We love to tell the story of the 90s. Like it was a bunch of like, just bunch of guys that just, you know, they weren't the most talented guys in the world, but man, did they want it. Man, that's couldn't be.
Maybe
they
we need to pull up the NFL.
Talented.
I'm gonna, okay. I'm going to do this right now. And this is where
they were
and I'm
talented.
I'm going to use ChatGPT to pull
you
this
and your
okay.
AI.
I just told Nick about ChatGPT. He's like, what the heck is that?
I immediately was like, get that witchcraft out of my house. All right.
Okay.
I don't play with that stuff. Give me a break. But just like as you're pulling up ChatGPT, GPT? Is that what I think it's
yeah.
We tend to romance the past of like it was a bunch of just guys that a bunch of walk-ons from Cozad that just baled hay and milked old Bessie. And then they went to Lincoln and they pancaked Oklahoma. It's like that's not entirely how it was, right? But yeah, it's there were dudes back in the day. Okay,
I mean it's starting to. So I tell ChatGPT, give me the list of all the Nebraska draftees from each year, and like they start pulling like, you know, 92 Will Shields, you know, boom, Mike Krell, for, you know, third round, you know, 74th overall, fourth round.
Yep.
Then you get Mickey Joseph, seventh round. I mean, there's like. Handful of people, second round, 93, John Perella, 94, Calvin Jones, third round, Tyron, yeah. So, I mean, Brandon Staye, third round, yeah. You know, it's not out of control, though.
No, but there still was, they still had dudes. I mean.
Yeah, wait, no, this isn't right, totally. This is Christian Peter, 98. Oh, that's not even right at all. ChatGPT, you're lying to me.
Well, here, let's get back on point here.
Okay.
Again, wanted to frame things before we get into it. So this is back from the Athletic story that's really, 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 really telling on a variety of fronts. Nebraska, in overall draft rate, turned 21 of 230 signees from 2009 to 2019 who ranked as three-star prospects or higher into the NFL draft, into NFL draft selections from 2012 to 2022. That's that time frame. That's 10.3%, which ranks 23rd out of 65 Power 5 teams. Not bad, but those are not the revealing figures. These are four. This is what you really got to chew on, too. Four out of the 65 four-star Nebraska signees were drafted during that 11-year period. That is 6.2%, 46th out of 46 programs that signed 20 or more four-star prospects. So that means out of all Power Conference teams that signed 20 or more four-star prospects, Nebraska is dead last in draft rate of those players.
I mean, it makes so much sense when you hear it, right? So like our three stars, we are 23 out of 6. We're roughly like average. Average with our three stars. With our four stars, we're dead last. We're the worst.
The worst.
And we kept mentioning this on the pod. We kept saying things like, I just feel like the guys that we get who are four stars aren't four stars.
Right.
Or we're getting these guys that are all hype and that the some other schools aren't as high on or something. And we get all excited about their star rating and they're not the dudes. And like I think this shows you that that's probably something that's real. Like, we're not getting the cream of the crop 4-star guys. We're getting sort of like the surface level 4-star dudes that don't have the real deal, like, stuff you need. And maybe we can go into, like,
oh, we're going to get into why, but is it, yeah, let me give you some frame of reference, though, on the 6.2% of the 4-stars turned into draft picks. By comparison, Baylor, 37.9%. Miami, 35.2%. LSU, 33%. Ohio State, 32%. Bama, 30%. Like that is not just like, yeah, you're within shouting distance. You're not even close.
So, I mean, that basically means, if we're just looking at percentages, we're 1 out of 20. So 1 out of 20 of our 4-stars is going to the league.
Right.
Baylor and Miami, LSU, Ohio State, 1 out of every 3. So you know what I mean? Then obviously, like, you got the percentages. Well, you can recruit this many 4-stars, that many guys are, that means you have that many good players, where we have 1 in 20 where it's like rolling the dice. You don't think, you really don't know. So that's where I'm like, man, that is a scary bad number for our 4. Like, that is a telling, because it's less than our 3-star number.
Yes, and it's
you know, it's
it,
like
it is, you know, and they even pointed out that Trey Palmer was the 5th 4-star signed since 2012. So, like, Trey Palmer just this last year added to that.
Yeah,
and so it's even worse without.
Yeah,
Palmer coming into the.
And granted, we have way more 3-stars than we will have 4-stars, but it doesn't matter. It's like your attrition rate for those, it's just terrible. That's just such a bad metric.
Yes.
When you start looking at it, comparing it to these other teams like Baylor, like, you know, Miami, who, you know, LSU and Ohio State right now have the one up on us just in terms of, like, their recruiting base and their last call, like, 5 to 10 year history.
Mm-hmm.
They have an advantage on us. Miami and Baylor really shouldn't have a big advantage on us, like, in terms of these percentages. So it's like, whew.
Last couple of things before we kind of get our thoughts on it. This is still from the story. 6 times in the past 7 NFL drafts, Nebraska, they were shut out of the first 4 rounds.
Another telling tale.
Like, 6 times in the past 7 drafts, they did not have first 4 rounds.
Yeah. And this is where...
So, again, it's not hard. And again, I can't wait to get into what we see as why here. But it's not hard. I think you and I sometimes would come down here and we'd into the pod room and we do our recap pods and we talk. And I think you would, and if you listen to this, you probably know, like, I think you and I would kind of look at each other and just go, like, are there dudes on the field?
Yeah.
Like, are you seeing any real dudes on the field? And the NFL draft is the ultimate truth serum.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit.
They're putting their money where their mouth is. Yes. They're putting in a lot of money into this.
It's not who they like or from what team they like or whatever. Like, they don't care. Can you play? Can you not play?
Yeah.
And that's how this goes. So, okay. I wrote down a handful of reasons why. And then we'll get into maybe just kind of within that, we'll get into maybe how Coach Rhule can maybe flip this.
Yeah.
I do think it's important to point out what's happened over the last 11 years. Because the number one thing I wrote down is a big part of this is the lack of coaching continuity.
Yes.
You've had 3 different head coaches over the course of this time frame that we're talking about. And there are, if I had to sit down, there are too many coordinators to even count.
Yeah.
Defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators. So that's reason number one.
Yeah.
I also think a part of the issue is player retention, like keeping players on campus, keeping these 4-stars on campus, keeping your recruits on campus and not having them transfer out. Like, that's going to impact your development when you're not keeping guys for their, 3, 4, 5 years if they redshirt. another thing within that is changing systems with the lack of, you go from 4-3 to 3-4, back to 4-3. You go from spread, you know, Sean Watson, Tim Beck under Bo Pelini to pro style under Mike Riley, then back to spread under Scott Frost. Like, when you're changing that much, that makes it hard, right? Because if I'm running a pro-style offense, my running back, my receivers, my quarterback, everything changes maybe in who you're evaluating and who you're trying to go get versus a spread style. But those three things, I think, lack of coaching continuity, leading to changing a lot of different systems and leading to a lot of players transferring, I do think that's baked into a lot of this stuff.
It's like,
before we even get to other things.
Yeah, I think those are all right. I keep going. I think, well, that's all right. I'm with you on that. I want to see where you're going before I jump in.
Well, so, I mean, let's get into what else it could be, you know? I mean, I think what's interesting is I get the sense from you that you feel like Nebraska's quote-unquote four stars were not good for, like, you're almost put, it feels like to me like you're putting it on the players and not the, I'm trying to get a sense of where you're at with it.
I think there's a couple, when I think of, like, you know, you can relate this to the business world, you can relate this to, like, the evaluation, recruiting, and retention of talent is everything, right? And development, right? So if there's four parts to that, development and retention would be after you get them, you know, the scouting and the recruiting of talent, right?
Right.
That's the first part. I think you got to look at all four of those areas and think, our evaluation of talent can't be good. It can't have been good the last handful of years. And or maybe we just we just couldn't recruit him. So either our evaluation was off or our recruiting was off enough that we had to reach for guys that you know weren't good enough. But I think that's a flaw. Like, if you are reaching for guys you're not sure of, or that meet your, you know, what you deem as your standards, like, you know, I don't know that. I'm seeing a flaw there. Like, we're going after guys that just aren't the kind of guys we need to be going after.
Yeah, because I think that's the important distinction to make there at the end of it, because the beauty of this thing is, like, they're not getting into of, like, a four-star is a four-star to these numbers, and a three-star is a three-star to these numbers. But that three-star and that four-star are still human beings, football players that have specific skill sets that are either going to fit and work at a place and aren't at other places. And that's where I think, yes, Nebraska got Johnny Football, not Manziel, so Billy Football, who is a three-star or a four-star by the metric, but a three-star, a four-star in a situation that maybe doesn't quite fit them for whatever reason, that four-star talent doesn't get maximized. So I do agree with you in that, like, there's front-end talent evaluation that I think has been lacking.
Well, it's almost I see it like we get a four-star guy that, like, you know, like, that may come with some baggage or maybe, but, like, their upside never seems to be that high.
Right.
You know, it's like they have, like, a three-star ceiling, but they have, like, I don't know, but it feels like we're, like, reaching for them or something. I don't know. It never feels like, man, if only that guy could just put it all together, he'd be the biggest monster. Like, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing the athlete types that are, like, so outrageous. It's like, man, if you could just coach him up, he'd be great. Or if you could just get him in line, he'd be great. Like, I don't really see that. I don't really see, like, that sort of talent even sniffing with our four stars.
You know
what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, it is interesting with some of these highly touted dudes. You know, was it like Noah Pola Gates, like a four-star guy? Like,
yeah.
I just don't feel like I ever saw, like, man, he may not know his keys on if there's trips and all, dude can run. He can, like, I just don't know if I.
He flashes everywhere. It's like, you know, especially the O and D lines. And, like, you know, I look at, like, you know, DNs and D tackles, and I just feel like I'm just not seeing the, you know, the, hey, we got this guy because he's raw, but, like, if we keep him, you know, in the system, it will turn out. Like, I'm just not seeing that upside or something.
Well, okay. How much of this is, because this is, I mean, this is such a loaded topic on, has so many different things. How much of this is strength and conditioning?
So that's the part that I'd be really curious about. I don't feel like, my gut doesn't tell me that, like, we've got the horses and we're not training them and we're not developing them physically and as football players. Like, okay, we're not winning, so maybe I'm off on that. Maybe I could be. But it's not, my gut reaction is not that, like, we just don't work hard here. Because I hear these guys come from Alabama and TCU, like, God, they work at Nebraska.
Right.
And I'm going, so I don't know, Nick, if that's true or not. But my gut says, I think that it's less about true development. And I think we have a scouting and a recruiting problem.
Or a coaching problem, too?
A little bit, maybe. A little bit. I think that that's fair to say because we couldn't win. I think the not winning led to the worst recruiting in a lot of ways, too. So I don't know. That's the part that I still don't feel like I can. I don't know if I'm totally right. You know what I mean? Because me and you, I know we did 5 years of the Scott Frost era, and it was not obvious to us that this wasn't going to work year after year.
Right.
And it's still not obvious to me that we didn't work hard or that we were weak or that we didn't develop guys or something. I just felt like the guys we had, like, they somewhat met their ceilings, but I never felt like their ceilings were like the dudes in the first four rounds.
But here's,
you know,
what's hard about that is where this is the interesting thing about the whole concept of player development is it's a two-way street. Like, it's not all on, at some point, it's not all on the coaches.
Yeah.
And it's also not all on the player, too. Like, there's got to be a combination of the two. Like,
you can't tell me that. Like, there aren't guys that, like, I'm thinking like Cam Taylor Britt, Cam Jurgens have been our highest two draft picks. But, like, you almost didn't think they were, like, second rounders coming out of here or something, you know? Like,
right.
So, I don't know. That's the part that's what's hard is, like, do you blame them or do you blame the coaches? Like, it could go.
That's why I always say
way.
It's a combination of the two.
That's probably a better way to say it.
People want to always blame the coaches for something. Yeah. Or blame the, like, or I think heeping all the blame on one or the other is not the right way to go.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Because I can't just show up. I'm Nick Bye, show up. I'm a corner. I can't just show up and say, okay, Travis Fisher, develop me. And not be like,
it's mostly on you. It's all, but they help.
But they help.
And they assist.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you bring up, like, I would say, when you go over the past 5 years in particular, because that's what's freshest in our mind, most fresh. Outside of Cam Taylor Britt and, but even Cam Taylor Britt was a little up and down. Outside of Cam Jurgens, probably, who can you say absolutely unequivocally got better? Like, you saw them get better. I don't think Martinez. I think it was one of the things we talked about all the time with Martinez.
Like, of our guys that have gotten drafted?
No, just in general.
I mean, I see, like, a guy like, you know, like a Nelson. Like,
Nelson got better.
Tanner got better. You know, I think guys.
I thought Lamar Jackson improved that first year under Frost.
Yeah, I think Jackson got better.
But far too often, to me, guys, they're not really taking those big steps either.
No. I don't know. That's where it's so hard because I would love to see, like, our team go to practice with Ohio State every day. And, like, how much different would those guys feel compared to the Ohio State guys, like, at a practice every day?
Right.
Looking, like, you know, we actually, like, you know, we play a few of these teams tough, but, like, I just don't know. I feel like they just have dudes everywhere. And the upside of the dudes is just so much different than what we're working with. And maybe I'm wrong. Because sometimes people say, oh, Nebraska looks the part. But I'm like,
do they?
I don't know that I've ever felt that way.
And I think sometimes we all fall victim to, you know, getting wrapped up in our own, I call it the Husker bubble, where, or it's, I mean, we do this all the time. There's like, there's the chick in your 8 a.m. English class that actually isn't that hot, but because, but in the context of the 8 a.m. English class, you're like, dang, that girl in the
Nick,
second
let
row
me tell you something.
Hot.
She is that hot.
But, you know, but I, what I'm saying is, I think us as Husker media fans, all this stuff, we get a warped sense, in my opinion, of how good these guys actually are.
Yeah,
where we create like we think they're better than they really are, probably.
Yeah, like, and I mean, even like a guy like, you know, like we get an O'Shawn, which for us we were like, we've done it, our pass rush is going to be amazing. We like extrapolate what we think they're going to be, and then like he was kind of a backup, had a couple sacks, was all right.
Right.
But like didn't change our season one iota, didn't really stand out that much. Nice kid. I'm happy for him. I'm just saying, like, we put too much out there, like, making him thinking he's something. But, like, I don't know, man.
We did it
just
with Omar Manning as
Omar
my fault,
Manning,
too,
yeah,
to a certain extent. And, you know, I anointed him before he played it down.
Yeah.
I feel like the dudes that – I'm just trying to go over the course of the last handful of years. The guys that really flashed were, like, Wandale flashed a few times.
Yes.
Adrian flashed a few times.
Yep.
I would say Trey Palmer obviously flashed.
Yes.
Samari Torre, I mean, he got drafted and he's in the league. He was okay to me.
He was
but
good.
It's crazy.
No, he was a really good player. I thought he was like he's not an elite athlete. He was a really good football player.
Right. I would put Westy in that category too, of just like
Westy.
But I guess as you go further back, you don't have to talk yourself into like, what did that guy, like, it was so interesting when we were doing those Husker Classic recaps and you turn on like the 09 team and it's like, you don't have to talk yourself into Eric Hegg, Dejon Gomes, Levante David, Jared Crick, and I know David was in 09, but like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, even you go back to 2014, Randy Gregory, like that dude, that night against Miami.
Yeah.
In whatever it was, 2013, whatever, like, or might have been 14, like, they couldn't block that. Miami couldn't block that guy.
Yeah.
For four quarters, they couldn't block him.
He was fighting everybody.
It
was great.
And he's fighting the whole chair. It was great, right? But, like, I guess what I'm getting at is, like, it's not, when you see it, you see it.
Yeah, like, we saw, like, Trey Palmer, and Trey Palmer, what did he go six?
Which
now?
That's, I'm like, that surprises me a little bit. Maybe I'm.
The critique of Palmer was that he, route running and hands, which I think it's fair. He's got big boy speed, big boy confidence, but like I would say he was not like the most complete receiver. And I think the problem is there's a lot of really fast guys in the NFL.
Yeah, maybe. And they think he's not just going to run past guys.
There's less of that in the NFL. So, yeah, but think about that. That's an interesting one. Like, I can't fault the guy for taking it to the NFL, but like another year might have done him good because he's got such talent.
He seems like he was higher than that, like could have played him, but I don't know. It's also like, could he have had a better year?
Well, I'm potentially, I don't know. I mean, like he did that good last year and I thought maybe just, if he cleaned up his game, he's like,
yeah, I don't know.
He could
like,
be a second round guy. I mean, he's that sort of talent.
That's
so.
What I see with him. But, I don't know. It's
hard because like
it's so hard. It's so hard because you're not down there, and all you know, all you see is the end result. It would be nice to see, be able to be like in the trenches down there and really see what it's like. Because I'm with you, like. But here's the problem: is Bo, like everything you're saying, the recruiting rankings debunk all of that. Like I think you're saying, like I'm not seeing the dudes, and like at the end of the day, they're four stars.
My thought is though, we are uniquely bad at scouting four stars. And I think what I'm finally seeing from this article is that the evidence says that's right.
See, that's so interesting because I would look at maybe the evidence says that something's happening when these four stars get to Nebraska that isn't like, it's more on what happens
when
at
you get
Nebraska.
Here.
That's how I took. That's interesting that you.
That could that, be. It's
that's
one
how
or the
I
other.
Interpreted the article.
Okay, so I.
Because to
I've
me, that article,
it.
Like, to me, that article, like, I think the whole point is the big 11-year sample size of, like, you're telling me, so how many, we said they had 60, so you're telling me of, like, those 60, Nebraska, the, like, the 65 four-star recruits, they were just, they were, like, the, Nebraska got, like, 65 of the worst four-star recruits in the country. Like, that's an interesting take to have.
I want to lay them out. I want to, like, if we, I wish I could pull them up.
Well, I'm sure you could. Like, I mean, it'd be hard. You'd have to go class by class. But, I mean, I think the point of this article, though, is just, like, you can have a bad batch for a class or two, but over the course of 65 four-star recruits and 11 seasons, it makes me think there was something wrong when they got there. And my point is, I think a lot of this, Bo, goes back to what we said at the start. I think a lot of this is lack of coaching continuity, changing systems, players transferring.
So the changing of coaching, the changing of systems is stunting the growth and players? See, that could be. And so I'm not going to say that's not it. My gut says, though, I think they're not the horses we think they are. Like,
okay.
They get here, and with great coaching and great continuity, they're still probably not going to the league. That's my take.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, they're guys that it says four-star, but they're, like, contributors at the college level, which right. which I'm not saying they're all busts. I'm saying they may play, and they may play decently, but they're not NFL guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. That's the difference. I think maybe I should clarify that. Bus and people that, like, contribute on a college level, like, that's succeeding to me. Like, if you go play in college, it doesn't matter if you're 5-star, 4, like, you play in college, good. What we're looking at is NFL talent, which directly correlates to probably winning a lot.
Yeah. It's just so interesting. It's so interesting.
We're not getting the 4 stars that make it to the NFL. Like, I just think there's got to be probably you're right. Like, some of it's coaching, some of it's players. I think I lean towards it's more the horses aren't the horses in the end. Like, they're not the guys that are going to be NFL guys from day one.
So what's so hard, though? Like, because what's hard is I don't think I disagree with you with the eye test of what I see from some of these so-called 4-star guys.
Yeah.
But I also think we have a big enough sample size of recruiting rankings, period. Not just looking at this 11-year period. I'm going back 15, 20 years. Like, sure, there you can give me isolated examples of, well, this guy was a 2-star and look how good he was, and this guy was a 5-star and he stunk. It, overall, recruiting rankings have shown to be pretty accurate. And when you look at NFL draft picks and you look at the teams that win in college football, they're a lot of 5-stars, a lot of top 10 classes, which my point is these recruiting rankings are overall pretty accurate. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out and unpack and what you're saying. So you're saying, like, the evaluations of these 4-star guys, like, somehow Nebraska just found 65 guys that were just misranked?
Yeah, like, we're getting the...
Because I feel like that's a hard stance to take. Even though I don't disagree with you,
the numbers tell me that we're not getting the elite 4-stars. Like we're getting the bottom of the barrel 4-star guys because
of just the eye test to you.
I think part of it's the eye test, and part of it's, like, there's a reason why most of those guys aren't getting to the NFL, because maybe they're 2- or 3-star guys, you know, like, in reality. Maybe they go to the right school. They were in the right situation. Because sometimes it's like, you know, a guy from middle of nowhere, you know, you name the state, from a small school, is really good.
Looked over, and
you know, like, and then some guys, you know, average, but he plays for, like, you know, All America High in California, and it's like he's going to get the higher ranking because he goes to All America High, but maybe he's not even close. It's just like there's some of that that I think is true, and I think we've kind of. Like the 1 year was like the Calabrasca guys. Like, our best guys were they couldn't come here and play, or even, like, you know, it was like, that's the kind of stuff I go, like, those guys aren't NFL guys. Like, you know, and but those were our number one recruits. Like,
so,
those
just,
are misses to me, like in the sense of like we can call them four stars, but like in, you know, they didn't seem like four stars actually.
Right.
And that's easy to do in retrospect. Like, oh, I can tell he's not a four star because he didn't succeed. But like, I'm just saying, like, when you see body types and talent, like in that first year or two, you usually have an idea of like, they need time, but there's a ceiling that's either high or it's like they're at it. And I don't see a ton of the high ceiling guys.
That's it's interesting because like, I don't, that's such an interesting take to have because I don't, on the surface, everything you said, I don't disagree with all of it, but like at some point, the numbers and the evidence against what you just said is insurmountable.
The evidence should exist. Like, so you, but
just in total.
But what you're saying is that recruiting rankings are historically pretty accurate.
Yes.
Okay.
Like,
so
you can give me for every Keyshawn Johnson Jr. that was a four star that isn't like, yeah, you, we could play the anecdotal tit for tat game all we want, but in totality, for the most part.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument.
I think it's so interesting that you're like, it's because I don't think you're absolving Nebraska of blame.
Nebraska has a part of it, but I'm saying part of what their problem is they're a bad picker. It's like if you're dating, it's like that guy always picks the hot girl,
right,
who's got a bad,
yeah,
like
got major baggage.
She's got major problems. Like, you know, like that's the stars. Like the star part of it is more like,
right,
that's the hot part, but they're like the qualities underneath aren't there. Or, you know, it's like, so part of it's physical, but part of it's like, do they have the football qualities of being really good? And like, I don't know. I think we're missing with our high ones and we're average with our three stars.
Cause so you know what I wonder, it is what I wonder too is everybody talks about the 500 mile radius and the lack of elite talent in that 500 mile radius.
Yeah.
A part of this could also be anytime Nebraska out of those, I'd love to also, I mean, it's, we should have looked this up, but like, I'd love to see out of those 65 four stars, the average distance traveled to come to school in Lincoln, I could venture to guess is probably greater than any other school in that pool.
That would be a great stat to know. Cause I think we're pulling guys
from Georgia and Florida and California. And
let's be real. The people that are closer to you, you get to know better. You get to see them more.
Yeah.
Like you get, I mean, you can watch film, but like when you get to go watch somebody live,
it makes a difference.
You know what I'm saying? You get to see them move in a way that like the film,
right,
you can't see in the film sometimes.
Or a cut up of, yeah, what they, yeah. And I
wonder how big of a deal it is. Like we're reaching for guys at, you know, with high stars from Florida, California, you know, like,
right,
we're reaching for these, some of these guys that, one, I don't know that they're as good as their star ranking is, and two, how much they actually want to be there.
I guess that was the thing I was getting at with like the distance of coming to Lincoln is a part of flourishing on the field is being comfortable off the field.
Yeah.
And if you're not, if you're fill in the blank wide receiver from Florida, you're from Miami or Orlando or whatever, you're from Atlanta and you're not comfortable in Lincoln, Nebraska, well then it's going to be hard for you to maybe maximize on the field,
yeah,
in Lincoln. Now the hard part with that is Nebraska was pulling guys from Florida and California and all these different places in the 90s, and they were coming here and balling out. Tommy Frazier,
yeah,
they were, you know, like,
hey.
So it's not like it's an impossibility to bring a guy from Florida and have them flourish here, but I think that's maybe a part of this too.
It is like that, and that's my whole thing is like, I think talent evaluation is it's like an art form.
Yeah.
It's a skill that like some people are better at than others, right? Recruiting is a skill that some people are better at than others. So development when you're here, retention when you're here, that's a big part of it. Winning attracts,
yeah,
makes all that stuff easier. It attracts better players to evaluate and recruit, right?
Right.
Yada, yada, yada. And then there's more competition. Everybody gets better. Yada, yada, yada. Those things all are, so there's so many facets to it, but like, I think where we probably disagree is, I have a hunch towards evaluation and recruiting, and I think what you're saying is the evidence may point more towards like there's a problem when they get here.
Yeah, I don't want to. Because again we talk about it, it's always a combination of the two. There's a part of like you don't want to just look at numbers and use that as gospel and just put the blinders on and blindly follow and believe that.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have a healthy dose of not skepticism with it, but like you have
That's right.
You
be skeptical of your own like closely held opinion. Like so, yeah, for like, me, I'm using that percentage that goes right to my own like gut, which is maybe wrong. Like I'm using it towards the gut, but what you're saying, this is why it's good to hear it, is you're saying no, that should actually point towards we have a problem when they get here.
Yes,
and but that's good. That's good for me to sort of.
But here's the thing: is it's a problem. No matter what, it's a problem here because it's those people that are evaluating and bringing those people here. So any way you want to cut out the and delve out the blame pie is all going to one place.
Yeah,
it's going to Nebraska.
Yeah, and it's going to. You have to go. You do have to go coaches more than players because the coaches have to get the players there.
Yeah.
So,
I always want to bring it up that, like, for some reason, we want to absolve players of all culpability when it comes to player development. Like, if a guy comes here and he doesn't develop, it's like it's never their fault. And you and I know, being in the locker room, like some dudes just don't want it, man. And some dudes just are pusses and they don't work hard and they're idiots. Like, I'm sure you saw a bunch of those kinds of guys. I know I did. Guys that like are the really talented dudes that just like they don't. I mean, the reason that guy didn't work wasn't because of Bill Self or Dana Altman or Greg McDermott or whatever. It's because those guys were not the right dude. So it's a bunch of different things with it.
This was another thing that kind of like that I'm still a little confused on, right? Because like I'm looking around the Big Ten. The NFL draft, CJ Stroud, Ohio State. Then we have Witherspoon from Illinois goes 5, right? Like, you didn't even know who he was 2 years ago. We got the Northwestern tackles, Skoronski. We got Luke Van Ness as a backup defensive end at Iowa goes 13. Jack Campbell goes 18 for Iowa. We've got a Maryland corner, Deontay Banks, that goes 24. Maryland a couple years ago was like, we're not like, there's something going on. Michigan had a couple, everybody's putting guys in the NFL from the Big Ten seemingly but us in the first couple rounds.
Right.
So I'm just, I don't know. It seems like
it's weird. It's a hard. There is no easy answer to this.
No, it feels like deep and like hurts. And, You're like, come on.
The cop out of this, like it's always a combination of things.
Yes. Yeah.
It there's no doubt. I mean, there also is like Northwestern's had great continuity. Iowa's had great continuity. Wisconsin up until now, which will be fascinating now that they brought in a new head coach. They're seemingly kind of like this feels a little 03-04-ish what Nebraska did.
Yeah.
It feels like that's going on in Madison right now. So it'll be interesting. But like there's been great continuity to a lot of these places too, which helps.
But I mean, Northwestern lost a lot of games, in the last couple of years. I mean, I guess they won also during COVID, but putting anybody in the first round, I'm just like, God, like we just aren't doing that,
Right. And it's hard. I'm not sure, we've been talking here for a while and I'm not sure we've solved anything, but I think that's the nature. I think this conversation is very emblematic and symbolic or whatever it is of just like how complicated
have learned something. Cause like, the way I'm looking at it, the way you were looking at it, were very different. But like, I think if you understand that there's two potentials, you learn where we can watch now. We can watch now. Okay, next guys that come in, is that next 4-star?
Really?
Does he really look like he's an NFL body?
Does he really like that 4-star guy? Do you just see the raw, tools and pieces there?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're a 4-star to me, you should be NFL potential.
Right.
And
Or you should have the NFL tools.
Yeah, I would think so. Like, you should have a chance. I mean, five-star, absolutely. But four-star, yeah. And that's where it's like, I think we need to, we'll start paying more close attention to that, because this was enlightening to me. This was like, okay, this was a big deal. I mean, we're average with our 3 stars, but we are bad with our 4 stars.
And again, you can poo-poo the NFL draft, and it's but there's clearly a correlation between, there's clearly undeniably two correlating things that lead to success in football. Top 10 to 15 recruiting classes leading to college football playoff appearances. Undeniable at this point.
Yep.
Or just national championships, period.
Yep.
And NFL draft picks and winning good college football programs.
Yeah.
Like, those are undeniable correlating, connecting things, period. And so I urge everybody, if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you should go read it. If you don't subscribe, you should subscribe. The 3-star U is what they have on a ton of different, they have data of all this stuff, not just Nebraska, for everybody. Okay, real quick, before I have a few leftover time, is there anything else with this story? I guess
I want to touch on Matt Rhule and his recruiting. Good.
Okay, yeah. So I wrote that down and I forgot to get to it. Like, okay, so now, like, .. Now what?
Okay, so this is where Matt Rhule, I've been very supportive of every single thing I've seen Matt Rhule do in the first year. He's done everything right. So I'm trying to be very open-minded that he, you know, has some different ideas and different strategies that could maybe, you know, go away from this, right? So one of the things I think that he has done is he's kind of, if he has a choice between, like, not an obvious guy, I feel like he goes for the fastest guy he can find, right? Like, these are things that are strategies to use at Nebraska right now that are a little different than maybe we've ever done. Like, he's taken a bunch of these track dudes and now they're tapping into the Texas pipeline and trying to establish that. Like, that is really the strategy that I'm seeing from him that I like. I mean, they're still going around the country as usual. They're trying to do the 500-mile radius, and those are challenges that, like, I don't know how he's going to do. Can he get a Raiola? Can he get a big time tackle? Like, the, you know, I think they're looking at this number one tackle in the country guy, right? So these are, like, big swings they're taking, which are, you know, would be huge, obviously. But, like, I'll be interested to see if Rhule keeps up with the, like, you know, maybe our 3-star guys or our low fours are these guys that are really athletic, but have, you know, they're either track guys or they're...
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? They're a little bit more fringy. You know, the fringy guys have higher upsides versus, like, they're just, like, glamorous for... Like, I don't know. Maybe that's... I don't know how to phrase it, but, like, it seems like he has a little bit different kind of guys he's been going for.
I think he feels like, and this isn't necessarily a totally original thought or school of thought, but I think he feels like, okay, you can't teach 4.3 speed. You can't teach 4.4 speed or 10.200 or whatever it is, right? Yeah. But I can teach football. Yeah. I can teach you how to read your keys and take on a block or whatever.
Yeah.
And so his thing is, I'm going to go out and seek out the things athletically that are just like you can't teach someone that's that explosive or whatever, but I can teach them football. So even if their football ability is really low, he has enough confidence in himself and the staff that he's put together that they're going to be able to raise that up. And if you raise that up and they have all the other stuff, now you got something.
Yeah, I think they're recruiting more for speed than we had in the past. Like, I think we were our offensive linemen were pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive linemen were, I mean, for a while there, you know, we had Stilley and Snacks and, you know, Casey Rogers and Jordan. Like, those are big guys, right? Those are big enough guys. But I think we might be looking a little bit smaller right now on defense. But more speed at the skill positions, receivers, corner. Like, it seems like they're recruiting more for speed there. Now, O-line, running backs, quarterbacks, we'll be interested to see what they do. I don't really know what we've got there. They haven't really gotten those positions yet. But I think he's recruiting more for speed than we have, like, specifically. Like, more than just, like, football player. They're looking for speed at, you know, those outside spots, which I understand. But you're also, you know, it's always the fine line of speed guy versus football guy. It's great. You know, like you said, I can teach football, but you can only, you know, some
there's
guys.
There's only so much. You can only make a guy so much faster or whatever.
Yeah, and some guys can't really learn the football. I play with track guys that, like, they couldn't play football.
Yeah,
as much as they wanted to run the 100, they couldn't cut. They couldn't start, stop, change direction.
Right. Take a hit, absorb. Yeah.
Like, they didn't know how to, you know, they weren't intuitive with the game, right? So that's the fine line when you take these speed guys, right?
I still think it's really important, A, for continuity. You got to try to find a way to, obviously, Rule to stay around, which I have no reason to believe that that's not going to happen. You got to keep Satterfield around. You got to keep Tony White around. You need to keep those three guys intact for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I think that is important. I also think strength and conditioning does matter. Like, it does make a difference to have a great situation in the weight room with getting guys bigger, faster, stronger. I mean, it just does.
And I think their new strength coach, just the few things I've seen of him, it's like, it seems like a pretty modern approach, a little less like old school clanging weights and a little bit more like it's all springy.
Seems like it. I mean,
it's like springy, twitchy stuff,
right?
You know, so maybe that will help, right?
Right.
We'll look a little bit faster.
Do just feel like Matt Rhule, from what you just how you absorb him, how you listen to him, what he says, how he's built. He's a guy, like, those true CEO guys have a big picture plan.
Yeah.
So I trust that. I think he's as equipped or more equipped than any coach that has come here to be able to put forth a plan in place, recruiting what they want, how they're going to go get it, who they're going to evaluate, how they're evaluating them, and then getting them here and maximizing them as well. So, like, I feel confident in his ability.
What I've seen so far, his recruiting prowess and, like, the structure that they're using to recruit and go out seems to be pretty good. Like, it's it's a pretty impressive, I guess, what I've seen. It seems like there's a lot of interest from people just because, like, they're doing such a good job at it, which is that's what good recruiting is.
And it's going to be hard. Now, one of the things you and I have talked about, can you be a developmental program, and can this kind of development in general happen in the transfer portal world where how many guys want to develop? A lot of guys don't even want to. They just want to go play.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's going to be continuity, player retention of the utmost importance for the next 4, 5, 6 years to see these numbers flip. But it's fascinating because this is this is it.
I'll tell you what, this is like, this goes up there with Dirk's
turnover
margin.
Story.
Yeah. It that was a great article by Mitch, and it
question.
Got me thinking for sure. So,
okay, I have a couple of leftover topics I want to get to before we get out of here, but I first want to talk about real quick something that your wife is involved in.
Oh, yeah.
We got to help people out, fellas. Mother's Day is, so again, it's May 4th right now. So Mother's Day is it's next Sunday. So it's in 10 days pretty much.
It's on your birthday.
It's on my birthday, May 14th,
May
14th. Baby.
So
it's just around the corner. If you're looking for, and this is for a lot of Lincoln folk to be able to do this
for
year.
We need to figure out, what do you get somebody on Mother's Day? So if you don't have any ideas, Mother's Day, this is what you need to do.
So there's a Mother's Day shop event at Campbell's Nursery, the Campbell family.
We grew up at that nursery. Okay. We grew up at that nursery.
Yes, we did. They're at 56 in Pine Lake in Lincoln. It's going to be... Is it this weekend?
Okay,
so this weekend
for Mother's Day, the following weekend.
Got it. So
get your gifts
from 9 to 5 on Saturday and 10 to 5 on Sunday. Campbell's Nursery, 56 in Pine Lake. They got a bunch of stuff: gift baskets, plants, candles, gardening tools, gift cards. Everything's going to be available in there, and it's for a good cause. Okay, 15% of the proceeds will benefit local CASA. Is that how you pronounce it?
CASA,
Lancaster County. And the Lincoln Alumni Chapter of Kappa Alpha Theta. So these Theta girls, you got to love them. But yep. CASA is a really cool not-for-profit. It's a local not-for-profit. It's a court-appointed special advocates. That's what the CASA stands for. Local not-for-profit organization that provides a voice for abused and neglected children in the court system so they can thrive in safe, permanent homes. So you could get a great Mother's Day gift, and 50% of the proceeds are going to go to a really good cause. That's another little thing to tell your wife, and you get, you know what you're gonna, you're gonna get the, oh,
you're a good guy if you go do this. So just remember, you get your gift, you're also a good guy for the charity. There'll be some of the like people there to help you if you're kind of, if you need some help on what to get.
I'm looking for a candle. Is there a buffalo? You got a buffalo wing candle in here?
Give me plant, and they will give you the plant.
I want plant for woman.
Mother Day gift.
I take plant back to cave. Give to woman. This woman a mother.
Okay, what are statuaries?
Ask ChatGPT.
Send me a ChatGPT.
Do you like how I skipped over that? What are those?
Statues?
Like the Heisman Trophy statue?
There'll be Heisman Trophy statues at Campbell's Nursery. Guys will be like, I'm there. See you Sunday.
Oh, so there you go. Guys, you want a good Mother's Day idea. It's a great Mother's Day idea. It's Campbell's Nursery, 56 and Pine Lake. Go check it out. Couple quick leftover topics and we'll get you out of here.
Yep.
Just a few thoughts I had. You know, some Casey Thompson residue in my brain. In some ways, it's like when someone shows you that they have done something before, it probably shouldn't be too surprising that they do it again. And not that you're like, once a cheater, always a cheater. Or once a transferer, always a... I'm not saying that. But Casey Thompson was at Texas. There was a coaching change. He felt like he wasn't going to be the quarterback and guaranteed that spot. So he left and came to Nebraska where he was going to get the spot. He was guaranteed the spot for all intents and purposes. This is the exact, in some ways, this is the very similar situation. Coaching change,
yeah.
New offense, new head coach, new system, new quarterback coming in for said system, picked by this new coach. Like, we've seen this before, and so I'm not saying I was shocked, but we really shouldn't be shocked from just the fact that he's done it before.
My issue with him was more like, well, why not at, you know, why now?
That's
and
what,
that
I
was my,
I don't know if I
and we
know
talked,
that.
We talked about that
what
last
changed?
Pod, but like it either must have been way clear after Sims's performance in the spring game in spring. But like, to me, I thought like, you know, don't you transfer
I would think
immediately?
I would think you either want to be really early in the portal or maybe it's good to be really late in the portal because you're, you know, Kelly Kapowski just walked in at last call and she's like, I broke up with Zach Morris and you're going to be, everybody wants Kelly Kapowski. That's Casey Thompson right now in the portal. Like there's also an element of like things that happened that changed around him. All of a sudden Auburn came out of the spring and didn't like their quarterback situation. They're sniffing around Casey Thompson. Same thing with Florida, Houston, like these different schools. So sometimes it's what changed. Well, maybe what changed were
the opportunities
out there.
That's a good thought, Nick. That's a good thought. I didn't think of it like that.
Nothing fully changed at Nebraska. It was all of a sudden Kapowski came in.
Kapowski does that to a man. Kapowski does that to a man.
Stacy Carosi.
Stacy Carosi.
He went to Malibu Sands and met Stacy Carosi.
Okay, because let's think about this. In this era, the difference between this era and others is like he could see like an issue where, you know, certain quarterbacks, like even like Wisconsin, like didn't they say like they're a transfer quarterback? They threw a bunch of picks and they've been kind of like in this era, you could sort of like promote yourself to a school and be like, hey, I would be willing to come. You know, like, that's the unique thing is like, you see an opportunity and that can change your mind more than it used to be. Like, you only left if you're like, hey, like, this isn't working here. And now it's like, oh, this is fine. I can compete for this job still.
Right.
But maybe I would like to be with that school under that thing because now I see my opportunity and that changes your mind. It's kind of a different.
It's a different
way to look at it.
So it's I don't know, the further we get removed from the news, the more I understand it, I think.
Yeah.
But with that said, the other thing I was thinking about, I wonder, and I hope this isn't the case, but I certainly can understand this. Now, I hate having your prevailing school of thought be being afraid of injuries, but you wonder, does Casey leaving along with Logan Smothers and Richard Torres, I wonder how that will be for Satterfield and Rule and their desire to run Jeff Sims. Because all of a sudden now, they're one injury away from a very interesting quarterback situation. And so it's easy to talk. Like during the spring, they were making Jeff Sims live and scrimmages and all that stuff. You wonder in the fall if they're going to be like, oh. I just wonder if like they clearly want to have that QB run game. But I wonder how much you want to run your quarterback when you know what's behind them maybe isn't great right now.
If you got it is like you can run Sims when you got Casey behind him. So it's like, yeah, that's interesting. I hope Rule will just be
do what you do.
Do what you do, man. Like you can't be scared. And one of our prevailing thoughts about spring was like, we're not good enough to be scared about that stuff
right,
yet.
Jeff
like
Sims
let's be good, and then we'll green shirt Jeff Sims.
Let's not make Jeff Sims to be. Yes, he might be the best of this situation, but let's also not act like Jeff Sims is the greatest quarterback in the world. We don't know that. Okay.
No. I mean, that's why we were fine because we thought like Casey might be better. So
right.
This is like the first time where Sims is now like QB1 for sure, and so like okay now like maybe then now the gap's bigger between him and two. You have to like. You have to be a little bit more careful, but we don't need to just like go in the tank now because like if they wanted Casey to stay bad enough, they could have. I gotta think that they would have helped him stay.
If you want to run the football and running the if you want to run the quarterback and running the quarterback is a huge part of your offensive plan and it's what Jeff Sims does well, you have to do that.
You gotta run.
You just gotta do it.
Yeah.
I was thinking about like what would be maybe a tough look for Rule is this scenario is entirely possible. If Casey goes to, let's say it's Auburn. He goes to Auburn and balls out.
Yeah.
And Jeff Sims struggles a little bit. And Nebraska struggles. It's like, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, as I'm saying this, I think you could Brett Rule if he were here, be like, "Well, guys, I mean,
it's hard.
I wanted Casey to stay. It's not like I forced him to leave."
No, but that it's also like you know, Joe Burrow wanted to come here,
right? Yeah, good point.
And but like, we really liked Adrian, and it was a little bit understandable. But when you look back, it was not understandable,
right?
But that's the hard part. Is like. This is what these guys get paid to do.
Right.
You get paid to make who do we think's better? And if it's not obvious to them, and sometimes it's not, you know, it's like who would have predicted Joe was going to go on and win the Heisman and first pick and
go to the Super Bowl and all
in the NFL? Like, you know, it's easy to say in retrospect. It's not as easy to say. I mean, Ohio State couldn't see it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They couldn't.
Right.
And, So it's not as easy as it seems, but that's what they get paid to do. They get paid to, you got to know, especially when you're picking quarterbacks, you got
to
know.
It just to be, I don't think you just crucify Matt Rule for this if what I said unfolds, but I'm saying if Casey's out there, if you're watching Casey in the SEC or something like that, just light it up and then Sims is on the struggle bus and Nebraska doesn't goes 5-7, you'd be like, ugh.
If Casey goes to a Big Ten rival or B in the SEC and does an important school in the SEC and does well, that will look bad and rule. If he goes to, he went to, you know, Arizona State and won 8 games, who cares?
Right.
But if he goes somewhere in the Big Ten.
I know. That's
if he goes to Northwestern and then beats us, dang, you know, like. Like, if you're Northwestern,
I don't know why you wouldn't go all. I mean, depends on
Does Casey want to go to Northwestern?
That's why I don't know.
Maybe not. Maybe he wants to go somewhere where it's like, hey, I got NFL receivers here, or I got an NFL O-line. You name it, right? He might have a plan, in place. He's a smart guy. He understands what's out there.
Right. Last thing we'll run. I just wanted to get your quick thought on this. It looked like I was reading some stuff that Nebraska is moving some in their practice fields. They're moving some turf out, and they're going to put some natural grass. Like, obviously, you're going to have the indoor facility that's got, and obviously Memorial Stadium's got the turf.
Yeah.
But Rule wants to have some practice strip of grass. I think he wants to practice on grass. I think he feels like it's safer. Where, I don't know if you...
So I heard that and I was a little confused because I'm thinking of the old Hawks Center where there is grass outside. Are they talking about the new...
I think they're talking about the new area.
The new area was going to be turf and he's saying do some grass.
Yes.
Oh, grass, fine.
I mean, I didn't know if you had some bit... I always liked turf. I mean, we played at turf at Seacrest and all that stuff. Like,
turf is just a little bit like faster.
I just feel... Yeah, I feel like I got game on turf.
Yeah. In high school, we played at Creighton Prep once. Oh, that was your
That's
game.
Where I dislocated my shoulder.
And that was like the old school, like...
Oh, no. Asphalt.
AstroTurf. But you played... You could play fast on that. Right. Really fast.
Right. But I just didn't know if you had any big...
Not like the leg braces. Like, no huge opinions on
okay,
that.
Okay, I didn't know if you had like, oh, thank God, I hate turf, I love grass, or vice versa.
The new turf's great, so I didn't mind it.
Okay, well, there you go. Hour and 5 minutes, baby. I don't know what... I mean, there's a chance that people listen to the first 40 minutes of us talking about this, and it's like Billy Madison, the guy, like, what you just said made absolutely no sense.
What? I thought it made tons of sense.
I thought it did too, but I don't know. I mean, I think we're like,
it's more of a conversation that, like, there's no like clear answer.
It's one of those
conversations. But there's something there. There's something there, Nick.
It's never good when the conversation you talk for 40 minutes and you end by going, well, yeah, man. I mean, I don't know.
I think what's good though. Where's the good? We ended on like seen it almost polar opposite.
Well, I think,
which is
I think
great.
One of the things you and I try to do is we're not like, we have opinions and we have times that we think we're right, but I also don't want to come on here and like, you know, act like I have the silver bullet answer.
No.
Or no lock stop exactly what this, I don't know.
We don't know. And that's the good, that's the right part that's hard. Like if we knew, well, you'd think Nebraska would know, but like, we got to stop doing that. You're like, maybe we should, I heard this podcast, they know, and we should doing that again. You
I
know?
Was listening to this podcast, and this is what the answer is, you know? But
There's no clear answer, but, like, we're trying to break it down. That's
all we're trying to do. That is all we're trying to do. Okay, my friend, we'll do. You want to do this again?
Yeah, let's go get some of those statuettes or whatever.
Let's go get a Heisman Trophy for Mother's Day.
A Herd at Sports Network production.